It's Thursday, August 29th, 2013, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 28, A Piggyback, He's Supposed to be Dead. Running time for this episode is 46 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast where normally I say something clever at the beginning. My name is Jeremy.
I'm background noise.
Jeremy ever says something clever?
I guess... say the dumb thing, so I have a tag at the end. I start clever, you end dumb. That's how it works.
And I keep things fresh in between, like Febreze.
And I guess as the dumb one, I'm Zach.
You never said your name, Tyler. It's important.
Actually, he did.
No, I didn't.
I thought you did.
No, I just said I'm background noise and then proceeded to introduce myself as Febreze.
Nice to meet you, Febreze.
So you're like Tuxedo Mask. You have like five different identities, one of which is an Arabian prince for no reason.
Also, I'm Dorian Gray. Who knew?
We've got a great, great show for you folks. I'm listening to a podcast that does like interviews and they record them before the intros, so they always say that and it's annoying. Because it's not like, yeah, this interview is going to be terrible, guys. Sorry. They're never going to say that. But I'm just going to assume on good faith we're going to have a great show for our first double assignment. And speaking of great shows, Zach, what great video games have you been playing?
Basically, since I've been stuck working, it's been mostly baseball still.
Gasp of the game.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. It's just baseball.
I've been, in the wake of getting a new computer, playing around with various things. Mostly old Super Nintendo games, but I finally got a computer that can run it, and I bought it a while ago when it was on sale during the Steam sale. But I got Heroes of Might and Magic 6.
How's that? As I have a similar story.
It is fantastic. I love that. It's everything I wanted about Heroes 3, simplified, and I don't know, it focuses way more on the strategy and way less on the resource collection. There aren't as many resources, which I'm kind of sad about, so you don't have, like, if
gems
you remember, yeah,
and
there are, like, gems and crystals and sulfur. Instead, there are just wood, gold, and ore, and crystal.
Oh, so it's not rocks, sheep, brick, and wheat?
No sheep either. But,
aww.
Kingdom of Loathing keeps joking about putting in a Catan garden that just randomly grows one of those every day.
Okay, that would be pretty awesome.
But no, Heroes of Might and Magic 6, I've only gone through, like, the first three scenarios of the campaign. It's really awesome. The actual story is kind of cheesy, but the voice acting is pretty good, and it looks awesome, and it plays awesome. It's no longer Hex Grid, which I'm a little bit sad about, but
Hex is all the way to go.
They
squares!
Really are.
Squares!
Yeah, it's squares in this one instead.
Yes!
No, I guess it could have been, like, triangles.
Oh,
those tests.
The
like.
Hex is the true power behind the throne.
I'm gonna let you finish, bro, but I've got an ironic echo in that I picked up Civilization V. Because I've been hearing great things about the latest expansion, Brave New World, and in this game, instead of squares, you've got hexes. And I also could not run it on my old computer, though I've had a new one for a while now. With the expansion Brave New World, I haven't played vanilla at all yet. I really, really like it.
Better than Civ 4?
Hard to say. I'm still exploring it, and like learning new things has given me a lot of enjoyment, so it's hard to compare. But there's a lot of cool things. The paratrooper now upgrades to an XCOM soldier. That's pretty cool.
Wait, seriously?
Yeah, because Firaxis made it.
Oh, wow, that's pretty awesome. Wait, we gotta ask. Is it XCOM squatty? Or actual XCOM, you know, when you actually have good troopers?
It says XCOM squad, so I assume it is mixed.
Are they powerful units?
I've only built two, and I was not in war.
Well, they might just be the squaddies, or they might be the guys that actually have power armor.
Tangentially related, you guys don't watch Extra Credits, but they did an episode on whether or not we should be funding a real-life XCOM. And it was awesome.
Who says we aren't?
Me. I have worked for the government.
Not all
yes,
of the government.
Yes, I have.
Wow.
All the government needs coders, and they only hired one.
That sounds like a terrible movie. But yeah, Civ 5's been pretty great. They added trade routes you can manage. They really changed religion and spying. They're a lot cooler. The cultural victory in the expansion, they completely changed. Now you need to generate tourism. And if you generate more tourism than your opponents generate culture, you gain cultural influence over them. And their people are unhappy the more dissimilar your governments are. And
you're
if
like,
you get full tourism on everyone, you win.
Man, I've been to China, and that place is freaking sweet. Why aren't we more like China, government?
They've also redone the world, or the United Nations. You get it at printing press, and you can do things like sponsor the Olympics, Worldwide Space Station. declare an official religion or official government of the world.
That actually does sound pretty cool. I mean, it wasn't really that much, but I only played Civ 5 for like an hour maybe.
And that was at launch, right?
And that was at launch way back when. I didn't really care for it. But again, when you play something at the beginning and you only give it an hour, man, that's not really being fair to it.
I really like iterative development. The fact that we've gone... Well, okay, I guess this is an expansion as opposed to
Well, there were 10 major patches to Civ 5, because no one liked it as much as Civ 4 until the first expansion came out. And there are a lot of holdouts even then. But I am really liking Brave New World.
Iterative development? That's like just patching things after it comes out, right? I just want to know what
free.
The term you're... Okay.
So, like, Minecraft is an excellent example of this. You buy it... And you get all future upgrades of it for free just because it's a game in development. So in software development, there are two models. There's what's known as waterfall, where you like design everything and then you do it and then you do the other step and then you pass it to the testers and then you release it. And there's like no going back a step. In agile or iterative development, you constantly do this cycle in smaller and smaller pieces so that like every 2 weeks or something, you get a new release. As a software developer, agile makes way the hell more sense.
So the first one is the standard model for game creation.
Any software at all. In fact, it's an old model and it's being phased out. Very few people practice it anymore, but the game industry is not letting go of that.
Well, I think part of it is because if you do the standard method, you get the whole game done and they're expensive. So
yeah,
you get them all done and get them on the shelf.
And then you have to keep paying people to keep
the long
them.
One. You have to keep paying people, and then you're upgrading everyone else's thing for free. So and they're getting the added content, so you're not getting any added income from them.
Yep.
Whereas if you just do it, release it, you're not paying for it anymore.
Well, that's why TF2 went free to play. They kept updating it, putting out like brand new content, not just like patching it, but like putting out new stuff. And they weren't making any more money off of it because they'd already saturated the market. So they're like, free to play, pay us for all the awesome we're putting out. But only if you want to.
And League of Legends, a game I play a lot, as you know. Free to play, all on microtransactions. That's the benefit of microtransactions and a well-supported, good game, is that they allow continued development.
That said, some games just need to be done being developed. And just
obviously, I wrote something
alone.
Way back when on microtransactions. But microtransactions, if they're properly done, just to add just little bonus things if you want to pay for it, that's perfectly fine by me. The way some of these guys are doing it, where it's like, this is a transaction in which you have to pay me...
To play the game at
all.
To
play the game the way the game is supposed to be played is just retarded.
Or, you know, like, charging exorbitant amounts for really small things. Like, I feel like SimCity did this, where they had, like, $20 to get, like, trains or something in your city. I'm like, come on, guys. That's not worth it.
One of the podcasts I listen to has a weekly SimCity is Terrible update where they just talk about the new terrible thing they did. They had a DLC that you had to pay them $5 for, but you also needed a special code that came with Colgate toothpaste.
What?
For the privilege of paying $5 for this DLC. Because it was sponsored by Colgate.
Okay, EA, just a quick word. Stick to sports games for a little while. And figure out what the hell you're doing, because apparently you don't know.
So, speaking of iterative development, one game that really seemed like it needed it, but never happened, it's a lot like Minecraft. It's called Terraria. It's a 2D kind of Minecraft thing, but a lot more action-focused.
It didn't get it?
Well, it did a couple times, but he left it alone for like a year and a half.
It just got a 360 release, and by just, I mean, I think 6 months ago now.
It just got its first PC update. Well, it's getting its first PC update. Speaking of which, though, I have a new server, and I know at least three other people who are going to play it. So, probably next week, I'm going to have details on after the show notes if you want to join my Terraria server.
Console scrub.
Well, you're a computer. You could do it.
Sucks to be you. I feel like the 360 should support being able to connect to other servers. Like
it should, but it probably doesn't.
Oh yeah, because Microsoft is like full of lawyers.
Well, they want you to pay $50 to play online with other people.
Oh.
$5 a month, I think is the...
Yeah, well, that comes out to $60 even. I actually didn't have anything else that I was playing, really. Just some random Super Nintendo games, but...
Well, Civ is a very time-consuming game. So the only other thing I've really been playing, in addition to League of Legends, because I'm addicted, is Kingdom of Loathing, where a new challenge path is rolling out soon, and in the interim I'm doing the Sea, which is the super high-level area they added that I've never done. Fight Cthulhu bosses at the end, but in the interim you have to fight fish.
So how much are they paying you?
Kingdom of Loathing? I am paying them $10 a month for their special items. Also, Jick reads my questions on his podcast when I send them in. I could probably ask him to give us a plug and he would, but I'd feel like a shell.
Do it anyway. Well, you're plugging him so much on ours.
Well, yeah, that's only because he plays a game. We don't make a game for them to play. They say, hey, the people who do Last Time on Video Games have this awesome game that is not at all themed to the podcast. I guess I could, like, make a retro game thing. Oh, no.
So, yeah, Kingdom of Loathing is great. Play it. I want Clannies to run Dreadsylvania and Hobopolis with, and you could be those Clannies.
Not gonna happen.
I was strongly considering it. All so five of you.
You can fight Count Druncula and the Zombie Homeowners Association.
Why is there a zombie HOA?
Because he hates HOAs, so, and it's a dread place.
To be fair, HOAs kind of suck.
Yeah.
I've actually found out when moving into my current place, we have an HOA, but it's been defunct for the last 30 years. Theoretically, if someone got crotchety enough, he could get 10 other people together and form an HOA.
You should totally do it.
It's like the reverse Captain Planet. So speaking of that, they're doing a Captain Planet movie. This is a terrible transition. It's not going to work. So anyway, in this transition that doesn't work, speaking of dystopian futures, what do you guys think a sequel should be / deliver? If you're going to make a sequel to a game, what needs to change? What needs to not change? What should that be?
I've given this some thought, and I think I've commented to this general effect before, but generally, if you have a fan base, and they said, this game was great, but if you just change those things, I think you succeeded. Well, on the other hand, you may also want to make more money, which, you know, may involve changing the game a lot more.
Well, oftentimes, if you look at it, I've not played Dead Space 3, but they go from being a very, you know, kind of creepy type of game. I've played 1 and 2. 2 is very much more action-oriented, and 2 discs for no appreciable reason. It's only about a 4-hour game.
Because they had a lot of content on there, dammit. It looked really pretty.
It's really annoying.
It was poorly programmed.
But Dead Space 1 to Dead Space 2, there's a pretty decent transition. Dead Space 2 becomes a little bit more action-heavy. But from what I've heard, 3 takes a lot of the stuff that made 1 and 2 good games and turns them on their head. Mass Effect went from a good RPG with some shooter elements to being a shooter with RPG elements. And Mass Effect 3 really pounded that home.
Well, I think their characterization in 3 was a lot worse, too, which... Did you ever see the advertisements for Dead Space 3? It was, like, some guy in the bio suit thing, and he's like, finish the fight, and totally pulls, like, a Master Chief and dives off a cliff into, like, an alien compound.
I don't think I ever saw that, but that sounds really bad, especially for this.
I've never played Dead Space. I'm like, isn't this supposed to be, like, a horror game, or is it one of those...
Horror is hell! Hell is scary!
In theory, I don't think it's that scary, but...
Well, yeah.
If you're looking at good sequels, though, you look at StarCraft 2 and Halo 3, which me and Jeremy have both talked about. Those games basically took the core concept of what they're running with and used what were effectively minor changes. Well, StarCraft 2 got a complete and total overhaul, but the core game was still intact. What made StarCraft 1 great, StarCraft 2 still had in spades, and the same thing happened with Halo 3. They just had a few added things onto the game that improved areas that were problematic in some ways.
So you're saying they're more mechanically similar, but slightly improved, but thematically more or less the same?
Yeah.
Well, Halo and StarCraft are not different than the games we're going to play on this podcast, but I think they have something going for them, and that those are both games with stories. I'd argue Halo's is pretty self-contained, whereas StarCraft's almost ends with a to-be-continued. But they have a story to continue, and do you think a game needs a story that can continue to get a sequel, or do you think gameplay is enough?
I think gameplay is enough. I mean, look at the Mario franchise, Zelda.
I think if you're missing story, you're missing... This is a personal preference, but if you're missing story, you're missing one of the key feet on what is holding up
what
a game
can do.
Yes.
I agree, but I don't think it's necessary.
You know, you have story, gameplay, and...
General aesthetic
just
tone.
The aesthetic, like the theme and all that. If you're missing one, it has difficulty standing alone, usually.
I think I disagree. I think story is an element, but I don't think it's a necessary one. Minecraft has no story at all, and I've lost hundreds of hours to that game.
As of many other people.
Kingdom of Loathing does have a story, but it's kind of a joke. I mean, the story is there's a naughty sorceress who kidnapped the king, so the diplomatically elected council wants you to rescue him eventually, but not too soon because they're enjoying having the power with the king kidnapped. And also, there's a sea with some demons and a hobo sewer.
and a hobo sewer.
League of Legends has a story and it's interesting, but it never lets the story get in the way of cool new characters, which is a lot of that game's feel. I mean, it's sort of a fantasy magic game. The most recently added character is a paladin with two guns that shoot light, and that's pretty awesome, and feels like it belongs there, even though the story doesn't really have room for a paladin with two light guns. So I don't really think story is important to a game. That said, Walking Dead is one of my favorite games, and that game is all story.
So I don't think story is necessarily important. Well, it is important to a game. I don't think it's necessarily what has to carry it. For me, in order to be a great game, it has to be both mechanically and narratively
strong.
Sound.
So you would not call Minecraft a great game?
It's pretty awesome. Okay, well, let me rephrase that. I think a game that manages to combine these takes it to a whole new level. I don't think it happens very often, though.
Well, I don't think it does either. There are very few games that combine story with gameplay in such a way. But, for example, I love XCOM, and as soon as I get it back, I'm going to make you play it. but that game, the story is... It's very much the kind of you make up your own story with what's going on in each one of your missions where the basic framework exists. It's a very, very good game, but because it doesn't have the story as technically sound, I wouldn't call it a great game. But then again, I don't think there really are any truly great games, no matter what anybody says.
Everything's relative. If you say nothing is great, then something has to be great.
Not quite.
Yeah, definitely. Because this is how human relativity works. I don't think you can arbitrarily say nothing's great. You can say nothing's perfect, definitely, because that's also relative, but... I don't think you can say there are no great games, and actually I could probably come up with a few if I sat down and thought about them long enough.
Getting back to the topic, though, do you think a game needs a continuing story or story hooks to justify a sequel?
No.
I'd prefer it.
What about something like Final Fantasy? What if the next Halo was they completely threw out Master Chief, and they did something that was thematically and gameplay-wise very similar, but... did not have any story threads. I don't think they would ever do this, but...
Spoilers for anybody who hasn't actually beaten Halo 4. It actually seems like they're kind of going in that direction, because at the end of it, you know, Cortana's gone. Especially thinking about it again, it feels like they're going with a passing of the torch type of thing, especially because they have a new company running it.
The new company outright said that's what they wanted to do.
I didn't hear about that.
Okay.
I'd missed that, but it does feel like that, you know, they're going to pass the torch onto a new character.
See, I think Master Chief is too marketable for them to do that, but it would not bug you if they continued to call that game Halo.
I played Reach.
Yeah, okay.
Reach was awesome, by the way, since we're talking about sequels that are thematically similar.
If you're going to have a swan song for something, Reach was the best way to go about doing that, because Reach was Bungie's, you know, kind of swan song for Halo. They didn't make anything after that. They stepped away from it,
and it was
outstanding.
Yeah, given, well, the... kind of class-based warfare is always awesome.
I guess that kind of goes back on what I said earlier. I guess I would qualify Reach as a great game because they did exactly what I want out of a game.
But like I said, look at a lot of the early Nintendo games. They don't really have a whole lot of combining story between them, but they
not usually.
Are coherently sequels.
I mean, Link's Adventure, Zelda 2, is a continuation of the story, but the story is not important. And Lost Levels, does it even have a story? I mean, Princess is still kidnapped, still go save her. It's not really a story.
Turns out... yet another castle.
Yeah, it turns out the last one that he rescued at the end of the first game, actually just a peach-shaped toad. So, she's still in another castle, Mario.
They don't really do story. Nintendo never really has.
Well...
with the exception of a few of the RPGs.
Zelda. Well, people call Zelda an RPG, and I would tend to agree, but...
Zelda's a puzzle game.
It doesn't have what we consider RPG elements.
Zelda's a puzzle game that's just been... switched around a little bit.
I don't want to call it a straight puzzle game, but I definitely wouldn't call it an RPG.
It's an action puzzle.
Well,
yeah, but it's one of those games where it's like, the generic term is adventure, and what the hell does that mean?
Well, you're
it's
going
an
on an adventure
puzzle.
Yeah, action-adventure. That's a terrible genre, because it doesn't mean goddamn anything. Everything's
no,
action-adventure.
No, it means everything, and that's the problem.
It means any romance will be a subplot.
Now, I would say that Zelda's a role-playing game in the sense that you are playing the role of Link. He has no character or personality.
But then, using that, you could argue that Halo is a role-playing game because you are playing the role of the Master Chief.
I could. I might even say that all video games are role-playing games.
On a level, yes,
ooh,
I agree with you.
Mind blown.
Except StarCraft.
No, you're playing the Commander.
Commander.
Or the Cerebrit.
There
or
was
the
no greetings, Commander. These important characters would like to have dialogue in front of you to express the unknown story.
What's the Protoss one?
Executor,
that's what it is.
Well, I completely forgot about that.
Somebody wrote a book called Liberty's Crusade for StarCraft.
And it's an adaptation of
the first game. And using that, you could theoretically argue that your character is Michael Liberty, which is the main character from that book.
Yeah, but that was sort of a created character. I've also seen Seamus Young wrote a post where he thinks the story of StarCraft 2 is not as good because the first StarCraft was born in an era where just having talking heads sort of yelling at each other was okay, and that made for a cool story experience. It would not be acceptable today, but because the story of StarCraft is a little far-fetched, like a video game story or something, when they try to add realistic graphics and cutscenes, that becomes more obvious. When it's not just Tychus and Raynor arguing on the mission briefing screen.
I don't know, it's pretty... The only reason that StarCraft 2 got penalized for its story, in my opinion, was because they didn't do the fully animated cinematics.
They did a couple.
No, but all of them weren't. In Heart of the Swarm, all the cinematics that they had in there weren't in-game engine. They were fully rendered cinematics.
Man, this is completely off topic.
Yes, it is. How did we get here?
No, well, what I was going to mention, but we might come back to this at a later date, is, like, JRPGs cutting corners by, like, not having voice acting and, like, having these, like, static paper doll things talking. Like, oh,
Agarus does that.
Well, yeah, that's a whole nother bag of worms.
Well, that's, like, influenced by anime, because anime cuts all sorts of corners by not drawing backgrounds and using really exaggerated cartoony.
But at least our character models move, like, at least the mouth moves.
I lament that in Agarus they have voice acting, but it's only in Japanese.
So speaking of things that are only in Japanese, Super Mario 2, a.k.a. Super Mario Bros. The Lost Levels. Where you can play as Luigi, but there's no two-player option.
Yeah, I didn't even know this was, like, a thing way back when, because I owned the Super Mario All-Stars cartridge, and I always just played as Luigi, and, yeah, I didn't even know
I didn't realize you could play as Luigi.
Yeah, at the very beginning on the title screen, it says Mario game, Luigi game.
Oh, I played just Mario.
Yeah, same with me.
I play Luigi, because green is the superior color.
It actually does pop out better from the red backgrounds.
Although, the first one that you start in is, like, kind of a blue and green background, so...
I had difficulties. It's a platformer. We all know my problems with those.
Well, and it's a difficult platformer, but let's discuss Mario 2, a.k.a. Lost Levels, so we compare it to Mario 2, a.k.a. Mario 2.
Well, this can be entirely summed up in one phrase, that is, it's just more Mario.
Yeah, did you guys play Super Mario Brothers? No? Well, then you can play Lost Levels and you're basically getting the same thing.
I disagree. Lost Levels is way harder than Super Mario Bros.
Yes, it is.
This is a legitimately hard game, Zach. I only got to World 3.
Well, no, I know it's legitimately hard. I got to level 2 and I felt pretty snazzy about myself that I managed to get to World 2-1 is what I got to.
This starts out roughly the difficulty of World 6 in the original and then continues to scale from there. So by the time you get into World 2, it's like doing the last world in the original.
I think it's even harder than that, because power-ups in this game are a lot rarer than they were in Mario 1.
Are they?
Yeah.
I didn't notice that.
One Fire Flower, and I couldn't jump high enough to get it.
Yeah, I guess I only did get the Fire Flower, like, twice throughout the entire game.
Most levels in Mario 1 had 2 or 3 power-ups. Most levels in this one have 1 or 2. And they introduced poison mushrooms, which are anti-power-ups.
Yeah,
I never got hit by one of them.
First time I saw one of those, because it's just a little darker than the standard mushroom, is like, wait, there's another mushroom? I wonder what that one does.
Actually, that's a good point. What do they look like in the NES cart? Because I played it on the...
They are darker, and they don't have the angry eyes. They got those later.
Yeah, I was going to say, because in the the All-Stars cart, they're purple.
Yeah, they are a little purple. That's sort of the dark shade, but... I only thought they were purple because I've seen the purple ones before, and I was sort of projecting that.
Oh, I didn't even realize that, because I just saw the dark one. I didn't know what it was.
Are they a lot more like in Super Smash Brothers, where the only way to tell the difference is slightly darker?
Yeah, but in Smash Brothers, they have the angry eyes also.
It's got a little bit... I thought I started seeing, like, a little scar on one eye for poison mushrooms, but
Yar!
That was it.
I've been around the mushroom patch a few times. Scurvy dogs.
And also, the platforming is really precision in this game. World 8 of Mario had some of that, but...
There's a lot of things in this game where you have to, like, be running at a full... Okay, so, in case, somehow, you haven't ever played Mario, you hold one button to run slightly faster.
I did not know that until I was 20.
Really?
I did not know you could run in Mario. And that's not super uncommon.
So Mario has two buttons. One is jump.
I even knew that.
One is you hold the button down and you move faster. It's really useful and actually necessary in some spots. So there are a lot of things where you have to get a running start in this, hit a spring, and the timing on the springs has always screwed me up. And then jump over a spring across a giant pit, and you have to time it exactly right, or you're going to fall just a little bit short. There's actually one where you have to hit a hidden block in midair to go over on top of a pipe because the jump is slightly too long for you to make even at a full run.
Point is, this game is hard, and I think because it's one of the first video game sequels, they just weren't sure how to do it. And so their thought was, well, who's going to buy this? People who played Super Mario Bros., right? So
and what do they want?
More of it.
And a harder game, apparently.
And well, it's like, well, we already did easy levels, why would we do more? And I think they learned their lesson, because no Mario game is as hard as this.
I think, like, one of the ones on the Game Boy or something where he plays Wario might be almost as hard, but...
Yeah, obviously, I'm the ham-handed platformer person. I am no good at them. I never have been. The levels I was on, I just kept... Fortunately, at least on the Wii, when you game over, you start at the beginning of the level you died on.
That's actually all versions of this.
All versions do it to world. I didn't know they did it to stage.
I believe it's stage, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Wow.
Really?
That's really nice. Because I thought if you died, you started over at 1-1.
If you were
1-1-4. But if you got the 2-2, you would start over at 2-1.
Yeah, it's... You start out off at the beginning of the world, my bad.
Yeah.
Which is nice. Mario, the original, didn't have that.
In the original Mario, if you died, you got a game over and had to start the entire game. Oh, man.
Is that how it came out, Tyler? Because you had the cart. No. Is that how
it went? He has the Lost Levels cart.
No.
Well, yeah, that's what I was asking.
All-Stars cart. That's an upgraded version. That has Super Mario World level graphics on it.
Oh,
okay. It
was
a complete upgrade.
Because I just was using the...
Yeah, the cart worked that way.
Digital download.
The digital download is a straight port, so it worked that way.
Oh, okay.
The only thing that's different is if you turn off the console, it saves your progress.
Save state?
Yeah.
The only original Nintendo cartridges I had were Mario 2, Mario 3, and a game called Willow, which is a lot like Zelda. But I think better. That's a whole nother thing for when we get into obscure games that you can't necessarily find on the virtual console.
So yeah, in contrast to this, Mario 2, a game you owned, the first game I ever acquired that was not given to me. I traded it in at a place called GameForce. It's basically like in GameStop, but
I miss
in the
GameForce.
One
of the nice things they had was you could actually try any game.
Yeah,
for
that
one
was
of
pretty
them.
Cool.
You could ask them to if you could try a game before you bought it. That was pretty nice. Totally relevant.
Kind of relevant. Mario 2 is very different. As I said last time, it's a game that Shigeru Miyamoto made, the same guy who made Mario, but it was based on a tale in Arabian Nights, is that what the story's called?
Yeah, or like A Thousand Tales of Arabian Nights or something. I think you all know what we're talking about, and if you don't, use the internet.
And yeah, it's convenient, you probably
have it
right now.
Or the link that I'm probably going to put here, so...
It was a game called Doki Doki Panic. You played a family which had a father, a mother, an older brother, and a younger brother. And they said, okay, let's make this Mario. And so Mario became the father, Luigi became the older brother, Peach became the mom, and Toad became the kid. And they got their respective powers, which would carry over into later Mario games. Mario is the all-around balanced one. Luigi has a flutter jump that goes a bit higher. Peach can't jump as high, but she floats. And Toad can
he's faster and picks turnips faster. Yeah. Although he jumps shorter than the other ones. So.
I only ever played Mario. I didn't realize it did different things.
Yeah. My favorite character is generally Luigi because there are some places you can only get to with him. Did you ever figure out how to do the super jump? If you hold down for long enough, you start glowing. It's actually necessary in some spots. You start glowing and then you jump and you jump higher than normal.
I could only get to third level, I think, is where I finally couldn't get past.
Before
did you fight Mauser?
To Mauser. That's the last place I got, and I kept dying.
Before we get too far away from the lost levels, I would like to mention, really quickly, you know how there are warp pipes in Mario, and this is kind of a thing in the early Mario games?
Yeah.
Lost Levels has one in World 5 that takes you back to World 1. What the hell?
Also, if you use any warp pipes, you can't get to the secret lost levels.
Ooh, what are the secret lost levels?
World A, World B, World C, and World D. They occur after World 8.
Oh, I didn't get
Nintendo's
any of those.
Got troll face on, and they got Tyler to go backwards.
Yep.
Oh, you know what I did at that point? Load state.
Yep.
Not like you were playing on an emulator or anything.
The DS version has load states as well. Only one, but...
No, I actually saved at the beginning of World 4 and then played all the way through World 5 and like, I'm more willing to just start over again at World 4 than I am to play all the way back up there. So.
What I did is I would save at the beginning of a stage if I had gotten through the previous stage without losing a life, because at that point I felt like I had pretty much mastered it and didn't feel guilty about skipping it.
Fair enough.
I just don't feel guilty about skipping things.
Yeah, speaking of which, there are warp pipes in this game. Super Mario 2 is a weird game. Like, really weird.
We mentioned turnips before. They're your weapons. Instead of jumping on enemies, you pick turnips and throw them at people.
Or you can land on the enemies and pick them up and throw them against other enemies.
In addition to turnips, you also have, like, cabbages and bell peppers and pumpkins
bombs.
And, like, beets and bombs.
And potions, which aren't a weapon. They take you to negative zone, where you might get cherries or coins.
Or health power-up in the form of a mushroom.
Okay. Yeah. What do cherries do?
If you get 5, a star appears.
Oh, is that?
Oh.
I thought stars were related to the number of enemies you killed.
No, they're related to cherries you pick up.
Coins give you an extra chance to get a life at the end of the game where you play roulette.
Yep. It's not roulette, it's slot machine.
Yeah, sorry, that's what I meant. It's definitely a slot machine. It's the Japanese style, though, where you get to, like, press a button and that determines when the individual reels stop.
Oh, that's Japanese version?
Yeah, that's how Japanese slot machines work.
Oh, basically all games work like that, because yeah. I think the Japanese ones are really the only ones that have implemented those in large scale.
Well, yeah, it's because even the Japanese ones are completely random, but it feels more like you have a control and skill, because in the video game ones, most of the time, you can stop them individually and tell.
In fact, you can do that in this one. I've tested it extensively on not an emulator, I swear. So,
I told you, the DS one has save states. You can just keep doing it.
Oh, yeah, that's... Yes, that. So, this game is...
It's weird. I was thrown off when I was first playing it, because even though I'm not a Mario or platformer fan person or anything, especially with Mario, I saw an enemy, I got up, and I jumped on him. And then he started walking around with me on his head, and I'm like, what the hell? I didn't want a piggyback ride, why aren't you dead?
In later levels, like once you start getting to World 5 and 6, you actually need to ride some enemies in order to progress. It's like they use it as one of their game mechanics, and it's kind of weird. This game feels a lot like a Mario game to me, and I'm wondering if that's just because it's one of the first ones I ever played, even though it's not at all a Mario game.
See, it doesn't to me, and I think part of that is the graphic style. It looks way better than Mario 1 or 3.
Oh. See, again, playing it on the All-Star cart, they all use the same graphics for all the games.
Okay, yeah, that's true, huh?
Yeah, I played 3 on my Game Boy Advance, and it looks a lot different.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. I also played, I mentioned, 2 and 3 on the original NES cards, and they definitely look a lot different. All the enemies, especially in 2, are really, like, they don't look anything like Goombas, so...
But as Zach was saying before we recorded, a lot of stuff was taken from this and put into later Mario games. We didn't talk about this, but every stage has a boss, but except for the third stage of each world, it's Birdo, who shoots eggs at you, you jump, you land, you pick them up and throw them at her. Later, she shoots fireballs that you just have to avoid.
And later, yet, she only shoots fireballs, and you have to throw these, like, mushroom-shaped block things at her.
Yeah, the, like, steel ones that you can climb on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I saw some of those in one of the levels I got to.
There's one level, or, what are they called? Sniffets, I think?
Yeah, the shy guys that shoot bullets at you. Yeah, those are sniffets.
Also, shy guys came from this game. The little awkward jumping bird guys didn't make it past this game. Which is sad, because they're one of the more iconic enemies from this for me.
What about the ninja guys? Did they show up again?
Ninja guys?
Yeah, they like jump up and down in
they
place.
I call them ninja guys because they had the black, they looked like they had a black bodysuit and just a little cutout.
Yeah, those are actually called ninjits. The little star-shaped kind of guys. Yeah.
They're ninjits?
Yeah, they're called ninjits.
Oh. I feel like they were in Galaxy or something. They're not widely used.
They're not a very recognizable shape. I feel like they're, like, generic enemy shapes.
Clearly, they weren't very recognizable as you didn't know what I was talking about.
Well, in some of the levels, I remember specifically there's an ice level where you got a bunch of these, like, little flies with pitchforks, and you can actually ride one of them if you can time the jump right all the way across the end of the level. There's actually a lot of stuff like that. I feel like there's some abusable elements, in addition to the warp pipes that you can find in the negative zone.
It's a weird game, and then it ends, and it's all a dream.
Yeah.
Seriously?
Yeah,
again?
Mario, yeah, again.
Yep, again.
What's that before?
Wake up.
We went over my hatred of dream sequences in Ghosts and Goblins.
It's
Ghosts and Goblins. Ghosts and Goblins is not a dream. It's an illusion made by Satan.
Close
totally different. Illusions made by Satan are supposed to enrage you.
Yeah, see, the difference is when this game ends, it's over. So.
And Mario's like, why did I eat turnips? Mushrooms are way better.
Why'd I have the turnips?
Dreams.
Mushrooms get me high way better.
Well, yeah, the final boss in this game is a frog who doesn't like vegetables. And he has this, like, vegetable spewing platform for some reason. And you had to pick up the vegetables and throw them in his mouth right before he shoots bubbles at you. Oh, and then
what
you...
What the hell was this guy on?
And then you... The... Apparently, the point of this is there is a bottle full of the pitchfork fly things, and you unbottle it and let them all free.
I think also it's like you're in the dream world, and so this all actually happened.
But only
Mario
in the dream.
Was asleep doing it.
And
what
the negative
the
zone is like
was
actual
this
reality.
Dude on when he made this?
Each of these.
Because it must have been pretty powerful stuff.
Oh, yeah. I have a lot of theories about Mr. Miyamoto's recreational activities.
He loves weighing himself. That's what he does for recreation. He weighs himself every day. Also, he has a garden.
Each of the worlds in this game is actually really well themed, though. Like, it's got a coherent element to it. And like, you're in Cloud World, or you're in Waterfall World, or you're in Generic Ice World with, like, generic ice. There's one where you get to, like, ride on whales, and it's awesome.
There's Egypt level, where there are pyramids and snakes.
And you have to, like, dig through sand really
fast.
That's
annoying.
Yeah, Toad is really good at it, though.
Yeah, that's true.
I was going to say, one of the unique elements of this game that I'm not really sure why they put it in, it's kind of weird. A lot of times, there are locked doors, and you need to get keys for them, you know, because that's the thing you do in video games, one-use keys. But most of the time, when you pick up a key, an evil mask will follow you around and try to kill you as long as you're holding the key.
Did you get to any of those, Zach? I don't remember when they first show up.
Like, level 2?
Yeah, okay. I got to him. He never hit me. But,
yeah.
Well, they have a pretty easy pattern to avoid, which is nice, but they still add an element of danger.
But later,
I
you're
think
like...
I used the key to whack a shy guy by accident. Yeah,
you can also use it as a weapon. So later levels, though, you have to like dig through sand while also carrying the keys. They have to like dig 3 steps, toss your key to avoid the mask, go and dig down some more, jump back up, grab your key. It's kind of tedious after a while.
All right. So which one do you guys like more of the two?
Actually, I like Super Mario Bros. 2 more.
I agree, actually. I think it
was something new and different.
It's also really quirky, and as I have mentioned, I like quirky games, so...
I want to be the dissenting voice. I like Lost Levels a lot more. I've spoken a lot on this podcast about how much I like Castlevania, and that's a game that's hard, and some people, I think Egoraptor specifically, have noted it's hard, because they looked and said, okay, what's a player going to do to rush through this? And then they put obstacles there to punish players who did that. And Lost Levels feels very similar to me. There are piranha plants in places where it's tempting to jump real fast. Enemies often come in threes.
Well, and I told you before, there's like a hidden block where if you just like run as fast as you can and try to make the jump, you will die. You have to take time to explore. I feel like, and there's no time limit in Lost Levels, so it encourages
that. Yes, there is.
Oh, really? They took that out of the old Super Nintendo cartridge.
There is a time limit on the Virtual Console version.
Yeah, that's and there lame. Was on the original, too. I don't remember running into it.
You've got like 400 seconds, and the levels aren't that long.
I am only slightly more of a proponent of Mario 2 over the Lost Levels. Lost Levels is a lot of fun, because Mario is a lot of fun, and Lost Levels is more challenging, and I like brutally hard games.
I'm not
games.
Too fond of either one, so it's kind of like a 50-50. Two gets the nod because it was something different than the standard Mario formula.
Yeah, and I like... Generally, 3 is freaking amazing, and it takes the best
agree.
Of both of these games, I think. So
I love 3.
It's a good game. Okay, since I think the majority opinion is 2 is better, Zach, what would you do to improve Lost Levels?
The problem with that game is that you're starting off, as Tyler said, effectively level 6. So if I were to just come in cold turkey as like a new player or something, and that was the first one I bought...
Sucks to be you.
Sucks to be me, because I'm going to get to level 4, if at best, maybe 3, most likely, because you don't have the practice leading up to it. I think more levels on the easier difficulty scale, even if you're good at Mario, just a couple of easy levels to warm up and get into the groove. You can jack up the difficulty later, but if just the easier level scaling and more of a gradual curve, then difficulty cliff would be better.
So, rebuttal!
Objection!
Point! First, let me ask. You played Super Mario 3 on the Game Boy, right? The GBA? They ported all the old Mario games to the Game Boy Advance because they ported Super Mario Bros. To the Game Boy, and it sold super well. But that port, after you beat level 8, you play level 1 of the Lost Levels, and it continues and it has both games. So do you think something like that is a good way to improve?
Yes.
Game? Actually, that's a perfect way to do it because... As
I said, the ramp-up speed that you were asking for.
And as I said, it's basically just more Mario and just
slightly
basically
harder.
Giving it as a expansion pack. That's perfect.
Okay, you are going to rebut.
Say, my rebuttal to that is if you had sufficient fun with the first level, and the first level is kind of wacky and awesome, I would say that way back when, if that's the only game you owned, you would probably play it enough that you would get good at it, even if you hadn't played the first one. I think we're spoiled nowadays with having a lot more games available to us, so that if a game doesn't immediately appeal to us, we can drop it and find something that does, because there are so many that exist.
That's a good point, because I do that all the time now. Well, I've got so much stuff in my bin. It's basically a solid thing of green now.
I think my biggest thing to improve the lost levels, actually, is a slightly wider visibility range. I realize some of the levels are designed for that, but there are a couple times where you had to take a leap of faith, and in Mario, that's really scary. So,
in any game that if you fall down a pit, you die,
and you're asking for a leap of faith?
Taking a leap of faith is kind of silly, because you're asking players to just pray there's going to be a platform over there.
On the other hand, the penalty for a game over in this is not super severe, so I don't think it's really that much to ask to take jumps like that. In fact, the question mark block over the thing that I was talking about earlier, where if you just run, you'll die, I thought I didn't get enough speed the first time, and I actually remember this as a kid doing this exact same thing. Not getting enough speed, or thinking I didn't get enough speed, and tried like several different orientations of my original run path, and died a couple times before I decided, this must be impossible. Let's see if there's another way around it.
All right. Any improvements for Mario 2 then? Because I can't think of any. I'm trying to.
It was well actually constructed that I can't think of any good improvements.
I have a couple, actually. There are some places. I like to switch up my characters randomly. Sometimes if I die on a level, I'll play as a character that I know is better suited to that level. Generally, I play as Luigi, but I like to switch it up a little. And there are some things I notice that you cannot do if you're playing as Toad, because he just can't quite jump high enough.
I think he can super jump in some of those, but you might be right, because there were a few where I definitely had problems with him.
Now, even with the super jump, there are actually some that are necessary to be playing as Luigi, because he has the highest jump. And I don't think this is necessarily bad, but I feel like they blocked your progress otherwise, and that's definitely bad. Like, if it was just a secret thing that led you to a negative zone with a warp pipe or something, I'd be a lot more okay with it, but if it's like,
anytime
beat the level, and you must be Luigi to beat the level.
Anytime you're blocking players' progress, unless they're doing something specific, is bad design.
Well, if you can just change your character, it wouldn't be a problem, but you had to die to change your character in that game, so.
Well, yeah, they're blocking progress. They're just arbitrarily blocking your progress unless you are playing the right character.
Also, for being a linear game, which was surprisingly non-linear, some of the castles have like three different ways you can go, and it's awesome, but sometimes the level design is a little obtuse, especially in the later levels, and you're like, yeah, which order do I have to jump on these clouds in? I don't know. And then you try all of them and find out that you actually needed to go back two screens, pick up a mushroom, jump on a sniff it, and then get hit past the cloud. So,
huh?
Yeah, exactly. Like that happens, I think, twice in this game, which this is a fairly long game, even with warp pipes, so Lost Levels is not nearly as long as this, even with all the dying.
Alright, so I think that concludes Sequel Month. What did you guys think?
I liked it. I've been waiting to play some sequels because there are a lot of good sequels that exist, and now that we've broken that barrier, I feel like we have a floodgate of games that we can now play.
I'm scared we're not going to play as many crappy NES games, though.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm so
Ice Climbers.
Sad.
Well, I'm going to have to be the one suggesting them. I will become the villain. I've lived long enough to see myself become the villain, and now Batman needs to tackle me off a building.
I'll suggest some, too.
Jeremy, you're the moderating host here. You've always been the villain.
I don't know. I liked it. I think it was an interesting concept, if nothing else. Especially being able to compare. Since we played so many of the earlier games before we played the sequels, I think being able to compare them was kind of neat.
Yeah, for a couple of them, I felt kind of silly since I hadn't actually played the first game.
Yeah, well, that's what you get for joining 10 episodes late. You punk!
Alright, so what do you say we do it again? All of the sequels we played this month, except for Doom 2, were NES sequels on the NES. Doom 2 used the same code as Doom, so basically it's the same thing. I think next month we should play sequels again, but ones that jump forward console generation.
Wait a minute, so
saying
we're
going
to play sequel to sequel month?
Yes.
All right.
Sequel
cool.
Month 2, The Revengeance.
the grasping.
Oh, that's a way better joke.
The grasping-ing. So what are we going to play as our first sequel in the sequel to sequel month?
Well, I want to start with Mega Man X, because I love that game, and we started with Mega Man and started Sequel Month with Mega Man 2.
Tempting.
But my brother is stealing my 360 in a week, and since Castlevania Symphony of the Night is only available on 360 and PS3, and I do not own the latter, Or if you own a PS
Vita,
Vita or PSP, you can buy Dracula X and you can unlock Symphony of the Night.
So if you are the one person who actually bought a Vita, this is handy news for you.
But I like how you can unlock the sequel to Dracula X, which is bigger in Dracula X. This amuses me greatly. But if you're not that guy, you can buy it on the 360, and I own it, so I think we should play Symphony of the Night first. We're skipping Castlevania 3 and 4 and Dracula X and Bloodlines, which makes me a little sad, but this game really is the successor to Castlevania 2. And it's two consoles later. And it's sort of the direction the games have gone. So I think it's okay.
All right then. Next time on Last Time, let us go out tonight for pleasure.
What is a man? A miserable pile of secrets. But enough, let's podcast.
This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2013.
All of the video games and other media mentioned herein is copyright of its respective owners. That may not be obvious.
You can contact us at ltlvg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. And if you want to contact one of us individually, I am Zach@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Tyler@lasttimeonvideogames.com.
Or Jeremy, G-E-R-E-M-Y, @lasttimeonvideogames.com.
You can visit our show page, if you don't want to hit the blog, at gplus.2/lasttimeonvideogames.
If you do want to visit the blog, lasttimeonvideogames.com.
And we've got an RSS feed. You should probably click on it, or one of the other buttons on there.
We're also on iTunes.
And the Twitters.
Twitter is @LTOVG.
Unlike all the games we play on this show, we cannot be emulated.